Judge Shaw, Injury Law, 732-888-8888.
Man Justice,
T-Man Judd, the injury accident professionals,
first class service,
Judd gets it done, maximum compensation's our goal. See JudgeShawInjuryLaw.com. T-Man Judge Shaw, Injury Law, 732-888-8888.
Welcome to Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. And now, here's your host, Greg Giamborisi.
Welcome, everybody. Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 58, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. I'm Greg Giamborisi. Thanks so much for joining us today. Hook, Line, and Splitter is presented by Judge Shaw Injury Law. We understand the toll injuries take on families, and we're here to help. For a free consultation, call 1-866-909-6894. Visit JudgeShawInjuryLaw.com. That's Judd with two Ds, ShawInjuryLaw.com. Special guest today, Blue Claws catcher Anthony Quirion. Anthony, of course, was here last year, 2022, and then spent the summer or the Aussie summer, playing in Australia for the Adelaide Giants. He hit over 330 and helped the Giants win the 2022-2023 Australian Baseball League Championship for Blue Claws manager Tank Adamson. So Tank, of course, was here in 2021. He'll be the bench coach, Greg Brodzinski, in 2023. So we'll talk to Anthony. He's in Florida right now at spring training at their mini camp. So he's been down there. Said he went home for about 6 days from when the Adelaide Giants won the Aussie League title, finished that one on February the 5th. And from there, went home for about a week and then down to Florida, where he is now getting ready for the 2023 season. So we talk a lot about Australia with him, but we spent some time talking about his baseball journey, which is pretty interesting. He's Canadian and ended up giving up hockey to pursue baseball. And he played there, junior college, and then for Lamar University in Texas. And he was Andrew Painter's catcher last year with Clearwater and a little bit with the Blue Claws, so we talk about that as well. Here's Blue Claws catcher Anthony Quirion, Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 57, presented by Judge Shaw Injury Law. Here's Anthony. Anthony Quirion, Blue Claws catcher in 2022, joins us from Florida. Spring training underway. Anthony, welcome. How are you?
How's it going, Greg? I'm doing great.
Great to talk to you. So you had a fun off, I guess not an off season, I guess, but you were playing and won a ring there down in Adelaide. So let's start there. What was that whole experience like? I guess we'll start on the field winning. I want to talk about off the field too, but you guys able to, I know you got off to a bit of a slowish start and then played great the second half of the season and won a title. What was that whirlwind run like for you guys?
It was honestly just going into the year, we knew we had a really solid team. Tank put together and Dave, our manager, put together a really solid team. So we knew we were going to compete. Like you said, we got off to a little bit, of a slower start. But then after that, just kind of reps started coming in, guys started getting more comfortable, and then we just started winning. And then we won 12 in a row, broke a modern-day ABL record. And then that kind of winning just kept going until the end of the season, made the playoffs, and the next thing you know, we're ABL champions.
So the ABL final is a best of three. You lose the first game on the road and then come back for the last two. And just from what I could tell, South Beach, which is where the stadium is in Adelaide, South Beach was rocking. Some of you guys had some great fan support and fun two nights there to close it out.
Yeah. There was a ton of people. I think they broke record crowds for the ballpark. We were over like 3,000, something like that, which in the year, a bigger crowd would have drawn maybe 1,500 people. This was like 3,000 people are behind the fences, just sitting in the berm and center. So it was a really cool experience. It was good to see the Adelaide community kind of come together for the final series. It was something cool to watch.
When did they talk to you about going down there?
So for me, I was in rehab in Clearwater at the time because I got called up to Jersey Shore, broke my hand the first week I was there.
Yeah.
So went back down and then obviously it was 2 months of rehab. And then towards the end of rehab, Tank had mentioned that my name was thrown in the circle of guys that could potentially go out to Australia and play, you know, to make up for missing time was the main reason. And so that's where I kind of caught wind of it. And then Edwin Soto called me towards the end of the year and basically told me, like, hey, we got this opportunity for you. Do you want to take it? And then the rest is just kind of went from there.
Was there any doubt for you? Or are you all in?
I was all in, especially considering the fact that when I came back this year, there was only 3 weeks left. So I played in 3 weeks worth of game, kind of didn't go exactly how I wanted. So I was eager to kind of keep playing and get that rhythm back. And so when they proposed Australia, I was like, this is perfect. This is a way for me to kind of keep going until next spring training.
And you got the rhythm back. I mean, you hit .338 in 39 games. How'd you feel at the plate? What clicked in?
Honestly, I kind of used Australia as a sort of an experiment to find myself as a ball player, kind of find what I need to do to compete every day. So before the season even started, we had 2 weeks where we were just kind of practicing every day, and it started from day one. It was just like, let me find a way that I can just compete, find a way to win. And sure enough, I kind of just found my stride, found what works for me, and then just trusted it. And that translated to a good year, both, you know, as a team and individually.
So for you, a lot of it was more mental, you say, than physical?
Yeah, I'd say so, to be honest. Yeah, a little bit. Like, there's tiny tweaks that you do with your mechanics. You know, every hitter is going to do that, like slight adjustments. But I'd say the main part was definitely my approach from a mindset standpoint.
So a lot of these teams have, you know, guys going to WBC. They have some ex-big leaguers. You guys had a couple yourself. What was the – how would you kind of assess the competition level? Was it better than you kind of expect? And what did you expect when you went down there?
To be honest, I didn't know what to expect, because when they approached me about baseball in Australia, I was like, I didn't even know there was a winter league down there. I didn't know baseball was that big. So I had no idea, but I quickly realized that whatever they were going to be, they were going to exceed them. The competition was actually really, really solid. And it was interesting because, like you say, there's former big leaguers. We got AAA guys, AA guys, guys that have been around pro baseball from Australia since they're 16. So the game felt very mature. You know what I mean? I would compare it to a high A talent level, but like very mature, because it's older guys that, like Josh Reddick, a 12-year big leaguer. You know, he might not be what he was, but he's still a guy that's been there and just controls the game. It just stands out. So it's kind of an example of the type of level of play that was there. It was very mature, very controlled, and it was actually better than I thought.
And you guys played Perth in the final, and mm-hmm. they had Tim Kennelly, who played for the Blue Claws 15 years ago. So you're talking about a guy who's been around the block, knows what he's doing. They had Pete Cosmo, who played in the bigs for a while. You guys have Michael Martinez. So yeah, there's some good players there.
Yeah, absolutely. And TK, I mean, he hasn't slowed down. It's unbelievable. These guys just play the game the right way and just stay good. You know, they're just very talented. A lot of good baseball players in Australia. And it was really cool to watch.
And he's on the WBC
team. Yeah, absolutely. I'm pretty sure he's their captain. They call him captain Australia. Yeah.
And you had a lot of Phillies guys there too. Obviously, Tank is the manager, but then you had Jared Carr, Rickson Wingrove, Jordan Fowler.
Starlin Castillo was there.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Yeah, the pitcher from Clearwater. Yeah, Starlin Castillo. Uh-huh. So you had a lot of, like, the Phillies are well represented.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it's good for the Phillies, too, to have that connection with the Giants, just because it allows them to kind of send guys and just keep playing overseas. So it's a really good mutual relationship between the two. So, I mean, that's how I got there. So obviously it was pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, they've sent guys for years down there, and going back from the Blue Claw standpoint, Steve Schrenk was pitching coach here for a while. He would manage there for a few winters. I know that's going back a decade. Luke Williams and Logan O'Hoppe both played for Tank there a couple of years ago. So yeah, they've sent a lot of guys there, off the field. So you guys played 4 days a week. It's a little different than, over here, but what did you learn, and what was your favorite part about life in Australia, the culture, you know, that you got to experience because of baseball that you probably wouldn't have gotten to experience or may not have gotten to experience otherwise?
Yeah, I think my favorite thing just in general was just the way that it was set up. It was 4 games a week, like you mentioned, and then 3 days off, or well, not 3 days off, but 1 day off and then days of light practice, which, you know, in comparison to what we do, they feel like days off.
Yeah.
But so it's a good hybrid of being able to kind of just do some stuff when you're not, you know, when it's not a game day, you can explore the city. You can, it doesn't affect really your weightlifting program because you're not playing every day. So you can still get in the gym. And like I said, we have a little bit more downtime. So if guys want to go play golf, guys want to go to the beach, just explore the city. It's a really good setup to where you're locked in for those four games. And then after that, it's, you know, a little bit of a break, light practice, and then you're right back into it. So I think that was my overall favorite part, was just the way that it was set up. And then obviously Australia was an amazing country, just like the food, the coffee, all that stuff. It was just amazing. So overall, it was unbelievable. I would go back in a heartbeat for sure.
What was your favorite food that you got to eat there that you can't get here?
Probably they call it the chicken schnitzel. It's like a chicken parm, basically. They call it the chicken parmy. And that was every Tuesday without failure. We'd go out and get a deal on a chicken parmy. And we were quite a bit of guys just going out there, just playing trivia night, stuff like that. So it was a good time.
You are from Canada. Are you a beach guy? Did you like the beach?
Love the beach. I definitely didn't grow up around any beaches, but I absolutely loved it. Yeah, I guess just because it was, you know, it's so foreign to me that whenever I get a chance to go to the beach, I make the most of it. So yeah, definitely didn't grow up around those kinds of areas.
The Philly signed Nick Ward, who had a great year, second baseman for the Adelaide Giants. What kind of player are they getting with him?
Oh, they're getting just the definition of a professional hitter. I mean, this kid is unbelievable. He puts together just the craziest at bats, just stays in the at bat for a long time, is just demanding. Like, facing him as a pitcher must suck, because you're gonna need about 8 or 9 pitches to get a result off of him. So, and he was batting leadoff for our lineup. Yeah. So it was definitely he's the kind of guy that really sets the tone for your lineup, does the right things just consistently, the small things as well. So he's just a really, really solid baseball player. And we were fortunate to have him with us in Adelaide, because he was a big reason why we made it to the championship.
And for those that don't know, he's from Kennett Square, Pennsylvania, and he went to Westchester. He grew up a huge Phillies fan. And he played in the A system for a couple of years, played indie ball, and will be in camp. So you're in Florida now. How much time did you have back at home? Because obviously the season, you played 2 extra weeks of postseason play. And now you're in Florida. How much time did you have at home? And was that enough rest? I know you're going full speed again.
I spent 6 days at home. So flew back. I had about 6 days. So definitely didn't do anything. Just caught up with family, friends. And to be honest, that's fine, because I come back here and it's not like I didn't do anything for 2 weeks. So I come back here, I feel rested, and I'm ready to go. And then mini camp is already underway. So I was able to transition into that just really smoothly, you know, after 6 days off. It was kind of perfect. So yeah. And now
how many guys are down
next week? Next week.
How many guys are there now?
Oh, how many guys are there? Oh, we got, I don't know the number exactly, but I'd say we'd probably be a little over 100. We have a ton of pitchers.
Yeah.
And then obviously all the position players. So it's a pretty big group.
So you're getting ready now for obviously a long year. What are your goals for 2023?
I think it's to sort of bring back what I learned from Australia and just apply it here, sort of play the game the right way. And just kind of keep that progression for me on an individual level, just getting a little bit better every day and just trying to win. You know, because that's what we were doing in Adelaide, and that translated to everybody just playing better for it. So, you know, I kind of want to bring that mindset in. And as far as like goals for affiliates, I mean, I would love to finish the end of the year in AA. Obviously, that's out of my control a little bit. Sometimes the org needs you to be somewhere, and, you know, you just got to go out, play well, and hope for the best. So, yeah.
What did you learn as a player in Australia that you think will help you with the Phillies this year?
I think the biggest thing I learned was just to find myself and my role as a player and not try to be a player that I'm not. And it's a pretty vague answer, but it's, for me, that means doing the small things, being a tough out, getting on base, and just kind of using my speed, because I'm a fast catcher, I guess you could say. So I can use that to my advantage, and I want to be able to be on base so I can, you know, use that. So it's all these small things. And once I took pride in those things, the rest kind of took care of itself, you know, and that just made me have a good year, I guess. So yeah.
You stole 8 bases down there.
Yeah. No, I went for it. That was new to me. I've never stolen bases. So I just kind of experimented with it and it worked out. Okay. So I definitely look forward to bringing that here as well.
When you were here last year, we talked briefly about this, but you know, from Canada, how did you end up playing baseball? You're obviously a big, strong guy. I would imagine, you know, there are a lot of hockey coaches that wouldn't mind you on the play defense on, as a defenseman there or whatever, but how did you end up, playing baseball?
So I was playing, so obviously I grew up playing hockey. I was a defenseman. So you got that right.
When you say obviously, like, here, I would say most kids go right in. They play Little League, and then most kids in Canada will go right into hockey at what, age 5?
Yeah. Okay. Oh yeah. As soon as you can walk, you can practice. As soon as you can skate.
Okay.
So I grew up playing hockey, and I was just really playing baseball during the summer because I thought it was fun, and I actually liked playing baseball. So I'd play baseball to stay active, and I was 15 years old and I got an invite to a baseball academy away from home. So I accepted, ended up going there. And then that's when I just committed full time to baseball. I got recruited out of Canada to go to Texas for junior college, did that, went to the Division I level, and then eventually finished in pro ball. And now I'm here. So that's kind of been my path. It wasn't really baseball from a young age. I hit my stride a little bit later than most guys.
Where is Sherbrooke?
Sherbrooke is in the Eastern Townships area. And so it's where I'm from. Although I'm from a smaller town near Sherbrooke, but people don't really know it. So I just say Sherbrooke, closest, biggest town. And yeah, so that's the kind of born and raised there. We're still in that area, not Sherbrooke anymore. But that was home for me. So it was up north, way east. I say the biggest closest city that people would know is probably Montreal.
Yeah.
Yeah, like an hour 15 drive from Montreal, probably.
So were the Expos were there until you were probably what, 8, 10?
Yeah. I've been to Expos games. I've ran the bases there as a kid. I've done all that kind of stuff in Olympic Stadium, so I got to see the Expos.
Do you think they'll ever put a team back there? They were talking about that kind of like half team with Tampa. That was kind of weird. They'd have to build a new stadium.
Yeah, exactly. I think they would need some new infrastructure. So I don't know if that's going to fall. I mean, I wish that there'd be a baseball team in Quebec. That'd be pretty cool. But at the same time, I mean, if it didn't work out the first time, who knows what would happen a second time. You know, they would definitely need a smaller stadium because Olympic Stadium was just massive.
Yeah.
So if it happens, I don't think it's anytime soon.
Yeah, Sherbrooke, right? Not that far, right? Like half hour from the Vermont border, give or take?
Yeah. Super close to the Vermont border, yep.
So were you an Expos fan, Blue Jays fan?
I was actually obviously an Expos fan when they were in Montreal. After that, I switched over to the Red Sox just because driving to Fenway closer, Park it was closer than Rogers Center. So I went to Fenway, and that's kind of like a really vivid memory, just being in Fenway Park. And then from then on, I just kind of always loved the Red Sox and kind of like rooted for them. And then obviously when in 2015, when the Blue Jays made their run, then I kind of started paying more attention to the Blue Jays, and obviously
was that the Bautista bat flip?
Yeah. So whenever that happened, I was just like, man, this is like our only Canadian team. I got to at least stick by them a little bit. So, yeah, you know, I'm on the fence for both.
Well, and obviously, yeah, you're a Phillies fan.
Of course.
So was it a culture shock when you went to Texas?
Yeah, a little bit, a little bit.
How many years were you in Texas at a couple different spots?
I was 2 years in one spot. It's called Clarendon College, a really small town in the panhandle of Texas. And then I was two and a half, like with the COVID year, at Lamar University, which is in Beaumont, Texas, which is more the Houston area. So I was almost there for 5 years. So I was there for a while.
So when the draft comes around, did you kind of think you might get taken? Had you talked to the Phillies? How did you end up with the Phillies?
So I did talk to the Phillies before the draft. And, you know, they said they'd be interested in drafting me. Obviously, that's, you just kind of wait it out. There's no promises when it comes to that stuff. So I was talking to the Phillies beforehand. And then obviously the draft ended up not happening for me. And then about 30 minutes after, they called me and asked if I was interested in this, in a free agency deal. And then obviously I said, yes. So I, you know, it wasn't too long after the draft that I got a call and kind of was given this opportunity, basically.
What was your first spring training like last year?
I'd say it was really exciting, to be honest. I remember being nervous, first spring training, you're at, like, everybody's a pro. You're just like, man, this is kind of intimidating. But I learned a lot since last year, watching a lot of the older guys, kind of how controlled they are, how mature they are on the baseball field. And so going into this spring training, that's kind of the mindset that I want, you know, more of a calm approach, been around for a little bit now. So you definitely feel more comfortable for sure.
So you're down there. I know they're doing mini camps and everything. Obviously the big league guys are there. They haven't started games yet. So I know they're bouncing around all the different fields. Do you have any interaction with them? You kind of get to, you know, see them work on their craft.
Yeah. We see them every day. I every day. So obviously I'm a catcher, so I can pull up to the field and I see JT just catching in the bullpen. So I can watch him, kind of see what he does. And then after that, they go into BP right beside us. So we always have windows of time where we can just kind of sit out there and look at them go. And I think every guy makes the most of that opportunity. You know, it's not rare that you got some minor leaguers just watching, you know, just trying to learn. So it's a really cool thing to be able to be around those guys every day.
Who are some of the, from the standpoint of you being a catcher, I guess first, when you switched to baseball, did you start catching right away? Or was that something you picked up later on?
No, I started catching, but when I turned when I was 16, I kind of switched over to the infield because I was always a pretty athletic player, so I could play in the infield. So it always ended up that I had to go fill, you know, a hole somewhere in the infield. So this year was my first full season catching and not playing any other positions. So I got into it, but throughout my career, I kind of got away from it, and now I'm doing it full time again.
What's the toughest part? Game calling?
For me, I'd say probably the pitcher catcher relationship. Not that it's hard, but it's very important, and every guy's different. So the reason why it's hard is because you got to find what works for every guy, and that's a little bit of trial and error, kind of getting the guys to trust you. And then once you take care of that and they feel comfortable throwing to you, then the rest just kind of follows along.
Yeah, these rosters now have not. It wasn't that long ago when you would have 12 pitchers on a minor league roster. I think last year, the Blue Claws peaked at like 18, maybe 20, including some injured guys. And there's three of you, three catchers. That's a lot of work. And you obviously never know who you're going to catch on any given day. Mm-hmm. So you got to be ready to catch 20 different guys with 20 different arsenals. How important is it to work with, you know, the pitching coach in addition to the pitchers, and, you know, to kind of build out that rapport with the different guys and know what works and what they want to throw and what works to a certain hitter type and all that?
Yeah, it's huge. It's a big part of it. And I think as a catcher, you have to be cognizant of that and interact with the pitchers and the pitching coach as much as you can, kind of figure out what their intentions are on the mound, what they're working on, how they approach hitters, how they attack certain hitters. And, you know, you want to play to the pitcher's strengths. Obviously, you don't want to just switch everything because of certain hitters coming up. So you have to know what your pitcher's strengths are. And like I said, that just comes from interacting with them, making sure you're on the same page. That's another huge one. And then just going out there and just trusting them. You know, they got the ball for a reason, and they're there for a reason. So it's just getting them to trust themselves.
Did you catch? Looking it up now. You did. Okay. So last April, Andrew Panning strikes out 14 of the 16 batters he faces in a Clearwater game against Tampa. You caught that game.
Yeah.
I know he's just toying with them, basically. But, you know, did you tell could you tell right away that it was like A++? Because I know even like B+ for him is going to get a lot of outs at that level, obviously.
Yeah. So I caught Panner. I was his catcher for most of the year until I got hurt. Essentially, yeah. I caught every start. And so I got to see Andrew pitch a ton. And I think what makes him A++ or just a plus pitcher is yeah, he's got all the stuff. You know, he throws 100, throws pitches for strikes. But it's just like in his mindset just makes him stand out even more. And I think that that's the biggest contributor to how he pitched. I mean, it felt like the game never sped up on him. He was in control of every situation. He doesn't panic, even though he was coming out of high school facing double A arms at the end of the year.
Yep.
And just there's just no panic in Andrew Painter. And I think that that's one of his biggest assets is he controls every situation really, really well.
Do you remember that game specifically, the 14 strikeouts?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. My arm was hurting from throwing the ball down to third after every strikeout. I did it 22 times. I was like, man, need a break. I need some guys to put the ball in play.
What would you say is his best? What would you say is his best of the off-speed pitches?
I think his slider or his curveball, kind of like that slurve, is definitely his best off-speed that I've seen. And now I've seen him in big league camp. He's starting to throw a cutter now, which
I read that.
I feel bad for him.
Good luck.
Yeah, and he's obviously still got that four-seam fastball at like 99 at the top of the zone, so he's going to be an absolute weapon. He just keeps getting better, which is very impressive.
Yeah, how much better did he get from opening day of the Clearwater season until early June, first week of June when he got promoted up here?
Yeah, no, he got significantly better. He was already – and it's tough to pinpoint how much a guy improves when he's just dominating all the time. It almost becomes standard, you know. Like, you expect him to go out there for five and not give up anything and strike out every other hitter. But I think you saw it more in just the preparation before the game. Just kind of like started dominating his little routine that he does. And then just making sure that from the get-go, he's already just, it feels like he's been pitching for three innings. You know, he starts the game and he already is settled in. You know, I think that was his biggest improvement.
And he's really laid back, you know, from South Florida. Yeah, really laid back, you know, has fun. Obviously when on pitch day, it's obviously different like it is for every pitcher, but he's just, you know, laid back, and you get the impression that nothing bothers him, no matter the situation, the opponent, the batter, the score, whatever. Nothing bothers him, and it's super impressive, obviously, considering how young he is. He doesn't turn 20 for another 5 or 6 weeks.
Yeah. No, it's fun to be around generational talent like him. You know, he's just an outlier. Big dude, controls his body well, throws 100 with no effort. And it's just rare that you see that kind of talent. So it's always pretty cool to pay attention and just kind of see how he goes about his day, you know? And like you said, he's laid back, super fun guy to talk to, super approachable. He's legit for sure.
Andrew Baker told me that Painter could be an NFL punter.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah. He's got these long limbs and he just uses them. I've seen him send some footballs. A long ways. Yep.
Well, he'll do better than most punters.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. But yeah, I don't think he needs a plan B for now.
No. All right. Give me who's the besides him, the pitcher that has the toughest. And when I say toughest, I mean like hardest or most movement. The toughest fastball for you to as a catcher that you've had in the system, like the best fastball for you. You know, from your perspective.
Yeah, I think I have two answers, to be honest. One of them is Christian McGowan, just a heavy, heavy sink, and it's firm. You know, he throws mid to upper 90s with sink, so that's never fun. The ball just feels like it weighs 10 pounds. And then
hopefully he got hurt in his first or second. Second start last year. Hopefully he will be okay and be back pretty soon. Wish him the best.
Yeah. And then the second one would probably be, I didn't catch him as much, but Griff McGarry, his fastball, just shoots out of the hand. It's just what we call induced vertical. So it feels like it rises almost. And that's another tricky fastball to kind of like get comfortable with, because it just gets up on you. And I've only caught one bullpen of his, so I can't imagine in a game when he's got adrenaline and he's just throwing it in there. I'm sure that's not an easy catch.
And then best off-speed pitch that you've seen, you know, slider, curveball, whatever.
I honestly would have to put Andrew Baker's slider up there. It almost felt like this year guys knew it was coming and they would still miss it. So he's definitely got that going for him, as well as another guy that throws 99 to 100 every single night. So I'm just happy I don't have to face any of these guys and I get to catch them. It's right. A lot more enjoyable. Yeah. Yeah. I'm on the right side of the ball when it comes to them for sure.
Last year you played for Marty and you played for Keith Werman and Tank. What's the difference between trying to go from Marty to Worm? Because they're two kind of – they both do great jobs, but they do it differently. Obviously,
yeah,
different
types of personnel. Yeah. For sure. I think Marty does a great job at the low A level. I mean, he's one of the best managers I've ever had. You know, you would run through a wall for Marty. You know, he's passionate. He's vocal. He's loud. And then the flip side of that is Worm, who is a lot more quiet. He lets you do your own thing. He trusts his players. And the players trust him, and there's this like really just zen-like quality to Warm. And then you have Tank, who is almost like a hybrid of the two. You know, Tank's super vocal, but he's also very like zen. It feels like nothing speeds up on Tank, so it's really cool to play for different managers in such a short amount of time. And then just like the amount of stuff that you can learn is just unreal.
Yeah, Tank will be back. I know you know this, but Tank will be back here as the bench coach. Mm-hmm. Keith Werman will be in Florida running the complex. Marty will be back in Clearwater. And then managing here will be Greg Brodzinski. Have you had a chance to meet him yet or work with
him? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I've met Bull for
everybody calls him Bull. I got to call him Bull.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. Greg, sorry. Yeah. It's just second nature now. But I met him in my first spring training. He's another guy that's just always seems to be in a good mood, just kind of – does his own thing, like super, super zen. Again, he's another guy that puts a lot of trust in the players and the players trust him for it. And you just want to go out there and you want to compete and get wins for those kinds of guys. So I think he's going to do a great job at the high level.
I know during the season, you as a catcher work very closely with the pitching coaches. You know, have you met Phil Condari yet, who will be the pitching coach here this year? Or are you still kind of, it's still a little bit out? Because obviously you're not. The guys are just kind of building up. You're not game planning or whatever.
Right, right. So I haven't had a chance to meet everybody on the staff yet, especially for the newer staff. Now, obviously, last year, Brad Bergeson was in high A and then Vic Diaz was in low A. So when I was there, I got super close to those guys because, I mean, they have all the information that you need as a catcher to build a little game plan. So we're their right-hand man, basically. So we're always in their ear just kind of like trying to figure out what every guy needs. And so
you're gonna call the game.
Yeah. So we do get very close to the pitching coaches and work with them a ton because they help out a ton because they know a ton.
What have you learned about calling a game as a catcher over the last 2 years now, or since you've been drafted? Did you call the game and did you call them in college or was it the pitching coach from the dugout or whatever? And how obviously it's super important. Different plans for every hitter. How have you improved in that area over the time with the Phillies?
Yeah, so I didn't call a game in college. That was we had a little card on our wrist. So we weren't calling pitches then. And then when I got to pro ball, we started doing it. So everyone calls pitches in the organization. Last year we did. And I learned a lot. You know, a lot of the hitters give you a lot of information after a certain pitch, the way they'll take a pitch, if they chase at a certain location. Like hitters give you a lot of information, so obviously that's a big part of making those in-game adjustments. But really, pitch calling for me comes from just knowing your pitcher's strengths and just pitching to those, because that's what they know as a player and what they feel most confident in. And so you want to play to that sort of approach over anything else, really. And just kind of, making sure they just trust themselves and just execute pitches.
In the old days in the minors, you play three game series, maybe four in college. I know a lot of one or twos and then threes during conference play. You're playing sixes now in the minors. So a hitter might come up if he plays all six games. and he legitimately could have 25 to 30 plate appearances in a series. But even if he doesn't play, you know, he took 20 plate appearances in a short time. How do you kind of work, you know, how do you kind of build those plans knowing that on Tuesday or Wednesday, I still got to face this guy 15, 18 more times? You don't want to tip your hand about how you're going to pitch him the whole series right away. Like, you know, how does that dynamic play in knowing that you're going to have to face this hitter so many times in a week?
Yeah, I think the game planning part of it goes both ways. You know, obviously from a pitching standpoint, we game plan against every hitter, kind of what their weaknesses are, and then they'll do the same. They'll look at our pitchers and go, well, this is his weakness. And so I think both go into the game with a plan, and then it's just a matter of who can execute the best. And if your plan is working right from the get-go, then there's no need to change it. You know, just kind of roll with it. But and then, you know, the good hitters are going to make an adjustment, recalibrate what they're, and now it becomes like a chess match between the two. So there's a little bit of unpredictability in pitch calling and game planning, but that's what I like a lot about it. And that's what I take a lot of pride in as well, is being able to make the right decisions most of the time. Not all the time, but most of them.
Well, I mean, if you're calling 140 pitches in a game, you're not going to bat 1,000.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Last question. What's your day like now, like a spring, like in spring training? What time you wake up? What time you get to the field, work out on the field, get home, cook dinner, whatever, all that stuff?
Yeah. So right now in minicamp, we're starting a little bit later just because big league has priority early in the morning. So we'll rock up to the field at like 9:45 or 10 a.m. And then obviously the breakfast is out. So just kind of eat, get ready. And by 11, the day starts. And then it's either defense, hitting, lift, or it'll be the orders kind of interchangeable. So it's always different every day. But that's pretty much what it is. And then through that, we have live ABs throughout the day. And then normally at around 3, we're done with our day. So head back to the apartment, meet up with some of the guys, go over some stuff that you did, you know, during the day. And then, yeah, just start winding down. So that's kind of how my days have been going, and it's been nice.
Well, keep up the great work. Congratulations on the championship in Adelaide. It was fun following along up from over here, with all you guys over there that we know from the Blue Claws. And have fun and good luck in the spring, and maybe we see you in come April 7th.
Absolutely. Well, thank you for having me, Greg. I really appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks, Anthony. Right.
Bye-bye.
Thanks to Anthony Quirion for joining us on Hook, Line, and Splitter, episode 58, presented by Judge Shaw Injury Law. Lightstar Energy Group is a leading energy brokerage firm headquartered in New Jersey. Our goal is to provide clients with premium energy management services to lower electricity and natural gas costs and to provide a long-term energy management strategy. We pride ourselves on bringing each and every individual business the same benefits of deregulation enjoyed by universities, municipalities, and all high-volume energy users, tailored products and contracts, lower cost, personal attention, and outstanding service. 732-722-5880 to learn more about Lightstar Energy Group today. Since 1986, Rich Green Lawns has been the leading lawn fertilization company, the Jersey Shore, providing lawn fertilization, bed weed control, tick and mosquito control, as well as tree and shrub programs. Mention this ad and save 50% off your first lawn application. Call 732-370-5963, 732-370-5963. I loved the part with Anthony Quirion about Andrew Painter. And, you know, he was really great. Anthony was, you know, he gives you details. I hope you learned some stuff, about the game calling and the different elements of going into being a professional catcher from Anthony. But I really like the Andrew Painter stuff and how he talked about how obviously he has elite stuff, but he's also just laid back, in control, poised, doesn't let the moment get too big. And, you know, when he caught him in Clearwater, I mean, he had games where Painter was just toying with everybody. You know, you had no chance against him. But, you know, you're talking about a guy now at 19 who has a very good chance to be the Phillies' number 5 starter going into the season. And he'll be, you know, the youngest or one of the youngest players in Major League Baseball. And Matt Gelb had a note. Gelb was our guest a couple of episodes back. He would be the 5th teenager to pitch in a big league game or to start a big league game since 1992. One of those was Felix Hernandez with Seattle, but it's a very short list. So I hope you enjoyed that with Anthony Quirion. That was fantastic, and we thank him for a few minutes. taping this part on the 23rd of March, Blue Claws did put out some of their promo nights for 2023 earlier today. Of course, April 11th is opening night at the Jersey Shore, presented by Jenkinson's Boardwalk. And then just to bounce through some other nights on the calendar, Philly Fanatic will be here on May 18th. Marvel Superhero Night with Black Panther, May 19th. Buster's Birthday and Touch Some Trucks on May 20th. Bark in the Park with the Dogs, of course, May 21st. That's a Sunday this year. Pride Night, June 9th. Irish Heritage Night, June 10th. Salute to Dad Day is a Sunday, June 11th. Unfortunately, Blue Claws are on the road for Father's Day, so we'll do, you know, Salute to Dad Day a little bit early on the 11th of June. Marvel Defenders of the Diamond Night with Spider-Man, June 24th. July 4th will be here with Postgame Fireworks. Military Appreciation Night on July 6th. And Asbury Fever Summer Concert Series, July 8th. Salute to Heroes Night, July 29th. Star Wars Night, August 4th. Marvel Superhero Night with Captain Marvel and Fireworks, August 5th. And a couple more fireworks every Friday starting June 2nd, plus special shows on opening night, April 11th, July 4th, and Saturday, August the 5th. So all that stuff is there for you. Check it out now at blueclaws.com. 47 days away from opening night at the Jersey Shore on April the 11th. So that'll do it for us here. This has been episode 58 of Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast. Thanks to our special guest, Anthony Quirion. We do ask that you like, rate, review, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Thanks to our title sponsor. That, of course, is Judge Shaw Injury Law. We understand the toll injuries take on families, and we're here to help. For a free consultation, call 1-866-909-6894 or visit JudgeShawInjuryLaw.com. That's Judd with two Ds, ShawInjuryLaw.com. We have some more stuff coming out over the next couple of weeks. Single game Blue Claws tickets go on sale on Saturday, March the 4th at 7:30, 2 a.m., so be sure to be on the lookout for information on that. That will do it for us here. Have a wonderful day, everybody. We'll see you soon. Thanks for joining us. Hook, Line, and Splitter, a Jersey Shore Blue Claws podcast.